We did it. Hi, everyone. I'm so fucking tired.
Let's just take a break. All right.
No, we're not taking another break. Hi, everyone. Hi. Welcome to the Horrors of Color panel, where you get to watch me struggle for like a solid hour before we can get anything done here.
It was only 25 minutes.
It was longer than I would want it to be. However, I am CJ. I am your host, panel person today, the person that's moderating this whole thing. And my pronouns are they, them, and I am one of the co-hosts of Blurred of Mouth. If you don't know, Blurred of Mouth is a show that celebrates Black joy and a whole bunch of other things that, honestly, I have no brain power to explain at this moment, considering I just sweated my ass to this point. However, we have an awesome podcast show. Like, we already have the show. What is this called? Like, we have an awesome actual play drop. We have an awesome actual play dropping tomorrow, called Woeful Revelry. And it is a urban horror, like, fantasy game about three very, very awful people, just dealing with life and a really fucked up demonic circus. So if that sounds like it's up your alley, and even if it's not up your alley, go watch it. It's dropping like super early tomorrow morning. So as soon as you wake up, it will be right there. And if you don't sleep or you're in like Australia, just wait. That's all. It comes out at like 5 a.m. Spotify. It should come out on all of our platforms since it's like our thing on our feed. But yes, enough about me and not enough about my podcast. I'm gonna pass it over to my co-host who knows more than me. Oleander.
Oh, I am Oleander. I am at Stray Nerd Boy on Twitter, TikTok, and on Tumblr, because I still post there. And I'm also a co-host of Blurred of Mouth. Blurred of Mouth proper. I'm not in the actual play. I came up with the vibe of the actual play and then passed it to CJ and ran. I'm here to talk to y'all about horror. And wear cat ears while do it.
You should pass it to someone.
I'm going to pass it to Kendo.
Hello, I'm Kendrick, or Kendo, whichever you prefer. I use they, he pronouns, and I am the GM and producer of Tales Yet Told, an actual play podcast focused on telling weird and fun stories full of imagination, thoughtful characterization, and inclusivity. We do horror. We do a lot of horror. Not on purpose sometimes. Sometimes I accidentally slip into it. But our first season, Strangers in the Woods, which is based on Over the Garden Wall, is a kind of weird folk retro sci-fi 80s horror fantasy game about traumatizing some children in a weird forest. And that's my jam, baby. I also am the GM and, well, primary GM, but not really, and host of Prayers in the Static, an actual play live stream that deals primarily in sci-fi and sci-fi horror. You can find us here at twitch.tv/namelessdomain every other Friday, starting with next Friday, October 21st. I almost forgot what date it was going to be, at 7:30 p.m. But you can find more about that on our Twitter. So go follow us on Twitter at Tales Yet Told. Pass it off to Joe.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joe, or Josephine. I'm at Scary Dog Friend. You can find me on Monster Lover Pod at Twitter, which is Monster Fuckers Anonymous. That is our not super work dating and rating monster podcast. With my friend Cleric_34. I also am a TTRPG performer and facilitator on over at Going Crit RPG. I am facilitating Call of Cthulhu at the moment and lots more of things to come. That's pretty much it. I'm here to talk about horror. I love horror and I love to terrorize these people all the time about it. So lastly, to RK.
I'm RK. I use they, them pronouns. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Russ Wildest. My big project that I'm working on right now is called Fear in Living Color. It is a horror podcast with an all people of color cast. all queer as well. We only have a prologue out, but we're working on getting the rest of the episodes out, and it should be ready soon. But I'm also a pro GM, streamer, podcaster, safety consultant, etc., etc. You can also find me GMing Camp Carnage over on Friends Who Roll Dice, bi-weekly on Thursdays at 7 p.m. EST. And I'll toss it back to CJ.
Awesome, awesome. Hi, everyone. I'm holding my mic now as if this is a stand-up routine, because someone told me I was low. But yes, so I'm just going to try to talk louder. So if anyone is like, CJ, we can't hear you, suffer, because I will not be changing a thing. But again, I would like to thank everyone for coming here, and we can just jump right into it. Given the time that I have suffered for the last 25 minutes, we probably won't necessarily be taking questions from the audience, but if we have time, and we think they're good, we will take them. For now, we're going to start with our first question. And I think a lot of you have already kind of like started talking about this, but what got you into horror? And that could be like, What was your first project in horror? So like, you know, for me, I would say, oh, like I would officially say it's Woeful Revelry, but like you could also say like, as a wee lad, I watched Final Destination and now I will never ride behind a fucking tube. I will never ride behind a fucking truck ever again. If you're me, but yes, go ahead. Sounds like Ole and you have an answer.
When I was a wee lad, that's the format I'm gonna use. I was a scaredy little baby. I remember watching Boogeyman in the 2005 movie that no one talks about because it wasn't actually that great. When I was seven when that came out. And I guess my dad was running like a daycare at the time, and all the other older kids were watching it together. And I like snuck down and I'm watching it too. Opening scene of the movie fucked me up. Cause it was like the dad is like, there's no such thing as the boogeyman, and goes into the closet and he opens the closet. He walks into the pitch black closet. I'm like, what the fuck? And the lightning flashes just enough for you to see him standing in the closet. And you can see it's not that deep of a closet. And then he walks back out of the closet. And then he gets dragged back in by his feet completely horizontally. Even though you saw the closet, it's not that deep. And the closet door closes. And then it opens back up and he gets dragged up to the ceiling, spine smashed up against the door. And then he's spun around. Like he's twisted. The camera starts spinning. That terrified me as a kid. And I hated the boogeyman. And then I heard the Will Smith song Nightmare on My Street, which was my introduction to Freddy Krueger. And so I was like, damn, I can't get a break. If I'm awake, the boogeyman will come get me. If I'm asleep, Krueger's gonna get me. What can I do? Right?
Die.
And so that was my introduction to horror. But then as I grew older, I fell in love with comic books. And you know, comic books, everything gets a fucking backstory. And a lot of the Batman mythos started leaning into more horror sensibilities over the past few decades. And so me and my fascination with comic books led to me developing this, oh, now I want to understand what led to these characters being these fucked up people. And then mixed that in with like me falling in love with Hellboy and falling in love with Guillermo del Toro movies, where the monsters were more like patron saints than they were horrific, terrifying beings. And then it just sort of domino affected into me loving horror, absolutely adoring it, by the time I was like 15. And so I've been deep in horror ever since. And while I've not done like a big project that is just entirely horror based, horror finds its way into everything that I do.
Yeah. Super similarly. I think my first experience was with the horror movie. It was daylight out at fifth grade, like sleepover, but it was like we were watching The Ring during the day. The horse scene, if anyone knows what I'm talking about, changed me as a person forever. I couldn't look at boats or horses for years. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't sleep for very much either. But then I watched, I think not too long after I watched the Orphan movie with Isabel Furman. And I was like, this isn't so much terrifying in the way of like just horrific sudden gore. This is horrific in the way of like people are the message. People being the answer to all the violence that happens is like the whole thing, which I then kind of understood that horror could be more of a tool for metaphor. So that leads me to more of the psychological thrillers, and movies like Midsommar or whatever, where the gore is very like intentionally laid out for you. Like it's kind of more storybook like rather than just like very sudden. But like, I think as soon as you realize, that these, you know, as soon as you remember, these are all people that are like actors and they're still alive and they're still fine. It's kind of seeing from behind the curtain, that picture of Uma Thurman and Lucy Liu with Lucy Liu's head half chopped off and like they're just like smiling and like they're fine. I don't know. I think the experience of how a horror piece is made and the story behind it is certainly what draws me in to a lot of horror media.
For me, I got my start in horror watching the Saw movies with my brother. Didn't really like them. Didn't really enjoy it whatsoever. Just kind of watched it because it was with my older brother and why not? And horror didn't really make sense to me until I got involved with horror video games. Specifically thinking of like Slender Man and like watching people playthroughs, let's plays of that. And then like the moment when horror kind of really sunk in for me, and this is going to sound completely ridiculous, this is a real thing. Someone made a Slenderman-esque game called Swamp Simulator, where the monster, where the item you're collecting is a piece of paper, it's onions, and the monster chasing you is Shrek. And it ended up being very good and like an actually scary situation because when he shows up, they're playing All Star, but it's been slowed down and is in a creepy tune. And it actually creates a horror environment despite the fact that it's fucking Shrek. And it's so funny, but it was so scary to see and play that like it actually made me like start looking at more horror things and how like just little changes to something can create a horror environment, which then I got introduced to the movies and I actually started liking the movies and all that stuff. So yeah, truly incredible.
That's so funny. That's so good.
The image of like being chased through a swamp with Shrek going, "Get out of my swamp."
I believe he also T-poses. Like he chases after you T-posing.
That is horrifying.
There's also a part where like Donkey's like burning in a fire or something. It's weird. It's a weird game, but it worked out.
That's so, I guess for me, I feel like my experience is very different from everyone else's here. I did not like horror as a child. I did not get into horror until I started making Tales Yet Told. It was kind of born out of necessity, honestly. When I was a kid, I was terrified of horror movies to the point where like I couldn't watch them. When I was like, I want to say I was like 6 or so, I was in a Target with my mom, and I was like, you know, I'm sitting in the basket, you know, because I'm a child, and we're like at the checkout lane, and you know, my mom's putting stuff on the line, and I'm just kind of goofing off. I'm a kid, and I turn, and this guy comes up, and he's wearing the like Scream, the ghost face mask, and has a real knife, and jump scares me, a 6-year-old, and it terrified the hell out of me. And like ever since then, like I had a hard time really engaging with horror media because like my brain would immediately go into this panic response. Like I could not watch the scary movies because those are comedies, those are not scary, but because Ghostface was in it, I could not watch them. And it ruined my relationship with horror until, I want to say, like, my freshman year in college, I watched Evil Dead for the first time. And it was the first horror movie that, like, really entranced me in the way, in its visceral, gritty, dark nature, but also in the way where, like, there are parts of Evil Dead that are, like, just kind of funny. because of the practical effects necessary to make it. Like, the 80s one? Yes, it was, yeah, it was the first one. And, like, seeing, like, I don't remember her name, the one woman who ends up, like, becoming, like, a zombie or a ghost underneath the thing, fucking just bullying them from underneath the thing. It's like, I'm gonna fucking get you. It's like, that was so funny to me. And I was able to engage with horror in a very new way. And I think even now, the way I use horror, or the way that horror interests me, is primarily as a tool towards vulnerability. Yes. Especially in in the games that I play, like, I use actual, like, visceral horror very sparingly. There's a lot of social horror of, like, being in spaces where expectations are put on you, and, like, that kind of very surreal way society breeds this horrific setting in which you have to live in. But, like, actual physical, like body horror or, a slasher horror, like, I really only use those in moments and in ways where I know they connect with the characters my players are playing very, very, very deeply, and use that towards a kind of, like, character catharsis of being able to prod at, hey, this is a thing you have wrong that you need to deal with. And I think horror has a very powerful tool as far as, like, eliciting vulnerability in storytelling. And I think it's a very neat thing to be able to play with.
So don't have sex and don't be a woman is the answer.
Don't be black either. That can get
yeah.
Honestly, don't be smart either.
Just die ahead of the game.
What?
Yeah. You know what? But matter of fact, just don't be in a horror movie.
So
true. Don't be in a horror movie.
Just don't be. Here's the thing. I don't think the signs. Black people aren't going to get caught in the horror movie. There was a video that was going around, like, not too long ago, in which, like, someone in, like, a scream mask was just kind of, would, like, pull up to people. And all of the black people immediately were like, gone, bye.
This is what I'm talking about. Why do people keep doing this? You are traumatizing people. I am a victim. I'm gonna start a support group.
On the note of, like, you talking about not being into horror for the longest time because it was terrifying, I find it really fascinating because, like, when you look at, like, the horror masters of the world, like, you look at them and they're like, oh yeah, I'm scared of horror. I don't like watching horror movies.
It's like, this shit, like, sucks.
Like, the director of Saw, James Wan, who's also the director of Insidious, of Conjuring, of Malignant, he does nothing but horror franchises. And they're like, so how do you feel about horror? He's like, oh, I don't like gore. I don't like gore and blood and guts. It's like, what?
That shit's scary. Why would I
know what to, like, what? Don't be weird. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess that brings us to the second question. What do you think makes good horror? And I guess conversely, if you'd like to, what makes bad horror? But mostly, like, what do you think makes good horror?
I think the same thing that makes good horror is the same thing that makes good literally anything else, and it's specificity. It's going in there and going, this is what I'm trying to do, and literally everything I do has to be tooled to achieving that, right? Like, everyone watches a horror movie where it's like, it just feels like the characters are suffering for no reason, because at a certain point, it's just like the person making it forgets that they're telling a story, and it's like, oh, you know what's scary? Gore. And they just throw unnecessary amounts of gore instead of thinking about what, like, the right amount of gore to tell that story is. The Nia DaCosta Candyman came out last year. And in that one, that movie was specifically trying to make a conversation about the white gaze on the destruction of black people, you know? And that movie goes out of its, like, it could have been like, yo, you know what? We're in a modern era where everyone likes seeing fucked up gore and jump scares and all of this and that. And that movie made the conscious decision to say, no, this movie is about how white people treat the destruction of the black body. We're not going to show a singular black death on screen. You might, at most, you'll see a silhouette of it happening. You will not see a black person die. And the only people that will die are white people who will die on screen are white people who actively went out of their way to, diminish or trivialize or fetishize, black death. Like, literally the first two deaths in the movie are two white people that tried to have sex in front of a memorial to a dead black man.
Mm.
And they're murdered for it, which also made white people very uncomfortable because the old Candyman movies, Candyman hunted black people. And this movie was like, nah, look in the mirror and say out loud that you don't care about black people and then suffer the consequences. Yes, the kids too. Fuck you too. We'll kill you too.
Yeah.
There's something very funny about imagining Candy, the character of Candyman, making that conscious decision of like seeing like the way in which people react and be like, oh, hell no. No. You're laughing a little too hard now.
Yeah.
You're laughing for the wrong reasons now.
I think, Kenda, did you want to piggyback or?
I mean, sure. Like, I 100% agree in like the specificity being like a very important thing when it comes to horror, because it directs not only your like attention towards like whatever the target of the horror is, but it also allows for it goes to what Joe was saying earlier about using horror as a metaphor, right? Metaphors got, if you're doing a metaphor, you can't be vague. You can't, like, you need to have a specific thing that you're trying to talk about. I think, like, for anyone who is trying to do horror, especially in, like, actual plays, right? For, which I think all of us have varying degrees of experience with, when it's a hard to do horror in a lot of tabletop games because, a very important part to horror, at least for me, is vulnerability. And it's very hard to feel vulnerable in games that are made as power fantasies or, games where like your character is supposed to be like the best at what they do. And so there are very few times where they can feel vulnerable because they have so many options of what to do in any given moment. And using that vulnerability for me is like actually like a huge thing as far as like how I use it in Tales Yet Told. Like, I think some of the truly most horrific moments in any part of Strangers in the Wood is where characters go, fuck, what am I supposed to do? Like this thing is happening. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing now because I've been put a barrier that feels insurmountable, regardless of if it is or not. It has to have that feeling of being overwhelming, which is a hard thing to pull off. Joe, thank you.
Similarly to vulnerability, similar to everything, my whole jam is intimate horror. So love to explore intimacy and relationships and any sort of power dynamic through horror. Any sort of just relationship, like even like with your friends or parents or siblings or something, like all of life is horrible and terrifying. So we can find something in there. I think when horror is poetic and artful on top of the specificity, this isn't a horror movie, but do y'all know the movie The Untamed?
Yes. I've heard of it.
It is a Mexican movie wherein there is a series of sort of stories, but most iconically, there is a woman that gets fucked by an alien tentacle monster. And she has a genuine relationship with that thing because she is in a loveless, lifeless marriage. And there's like an incident at some point with that monster and her. But for the most part, the director, I was listening to an interview, and the writer and director was inspired by a hate crime that happened in his like hometown, and like specifically to like a gay man. And there's also a gay male character in that movie. So that even, you know, obviously that movie has different sort of points of views that it follows. And I'm not sure if the tentacle fucking was specific to that incident that he was talking about. But there, what that movie had to do with at the end of the day was about like people who are trying to find their passion, and that passion is demonized, and it looks like different things to different types of people. So that housewife, that woman, you know, conventionally that tentacle monster should have been terrifying to her, but it was providing her pleasure, which is not only something she doesn't get out of her marriage, but it's like her only source of comfort. So like, it's very interesting the way we look at things, and how they have been demonized.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think for me, what makes good horror is, also the intention, like keeping, like you said, consistency, keeping intention consistent. If you want to make a campy horror flick, make a campy horror thing. If you want to make something actually like legitimately terrifying, make something actually legitimately terrifying. It like, I think one of the movies that does a bad job of this, if you look at them, is the Saw series. The first two movies are a great talk about like, hey, I'm giving you these tests to see like, can you deal with them? Can you handle them? And then along the way, as you get further and further down the series, there are 9 Saw movies. It gets messier. Like the message gets messier, especially as they stop focusing on the people who are in the traps and start focusing on random people. I think one of the movies that has, that's later on, that actually has a great point in it, is the 5th movie, which is all about a character who goes in and like, it's all talking about the American healthcare system. It is a damnation of the American healthcare system, and they do it really well, and there's all this gore around, but like later on in the series they kind of focus too much on like the gore, or they focus too much on like the cops who were involved who aren't in the traps, and they just lose the intention of what they're trying to say with it. So I think that like, especially in TTRPGs, if you're running an actual play, if you're running a podcast, it's always good to like have that conversation with your players, or with your GM if you are a player, about like what the intention of the story is, so that way you can build towards that. So that's personally what I think makes horror good, and also what makes it bad is having a bad set of intention and like consistencies.
I feel like another thing that I love in like a good horror story is that a lot of them somewhat have like this tiny, at least a tiny little bit of like, this feels like a cautionary fairy tale.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Where like The Shape of Water is not a horror movie. It's a movie with like some horror tinge to it. But it's like
fish this, fucking.
Yeah, it has some fish
fucking.
Yeah. hell yeah. I'm here for fish sticks and romance. the movie, the movie is very much like this tale of like, yeah, the whole idea of the ideal American is bullshit. Just be there for your community and love one another and protect one another. It's not this is the ideal American. This is the people who are made in God's image. This is the people who deserve good things. These are the people that deserve this and that. Those people are unhappy. Like they are trying so hard to be the ideal American or the ideal person in the eye of God that they're just sitting there being warped into monsters by it. Literally Michael Shannon rips off his own fucking fingers in that movie.
Everything with Michael Shannon is so horrific.
Michael Shannon doesn't know how to be normal. They just cast him like, we need a guy to play a freak.
Yeah.
But it's really one of those feelings of like, on top of that, you can, since it does have that cautionary tale feel to it, you can see how they got there. And that's what makes it vulnerable and hit different, even if you're not sympathizing with it. Like, no point in the story do they make you try to sympathize with Michael Shannon. but you can see, like, literally they show in the beginning the guy holding up the picture where he's like, yeah, this company wants me to draw the ideal American family. And then we see Michael Shannon's character go back to his house, and it's just like in the poster. It has these two kids enjoying their Jell-O that their wife, who's a housewife, their mom, who's a housewife, made them. And then Michael Shannon shows up, but he's not actually happy. He, you see him have the most joyless sex of his life. And then be miserable and not talk to the kids, and then go back to work to go be the ideal American, and then go torture someone that he views as lesser than him. And it really hits in a way where you're just like, damn, I understand what they're trying to say, you know?
Totally.
But also there is a monster, in it that, you know, eats a cat and has a musical number and is hot.
Yeah.
He surely does eat a cat.
I'm sure he do.
Carceral. Incarcerating all of you.
Oh no, please.
Oh no.
There's a horror movie about this.
Horny. What? Horny too?
You know what? Is that what the laser movies are about?
Kind of, actually. Hold on.
Hold on.
Corny jail.
Wrong.
I feel like that's also the It Follows movies, except it's more
like
corny execution. You were horny once, now you must die.
Vagina Dentata is a good movie, by the way.
The first two Nightmare on Elm Street movies, kind of too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have sex,
you won't die.
Don't have sex, you won't die.
And the second one was like, don't have sex and be gay and you won't die.
Whoa. That is whoa. So, I mean, you know,
the second one was real gay.
Being gay is horrifying. Let's be.
I mean, literally, that's true.
In the second Nightmare on Elm Street movie, there's this scene where the girl that he's been going to like a party with, kisses him, and then he gets into a panic because he can feel Freddy coming out of him. And he runs through the streets to go to his homie's house. He goes, can I stay with you tonight? I'm scared and I need someone. And it's real, the ordering of these events feels really
interesting.
Like you're trying to say something. And then Freddy pops out of him.
I believe there's also a scene in a leather bar in that movie.
Yeah.
Where like the main character is with his bestie at a leather bar, and it's just a lot of men. Yep, yep.
Interesting.
And then Freddy kills the gym teacher by taking him to a gym shower and then whipping his name into the gym teacher's back. And so it says Freddy's back on the gym teacher's back.
Oh my god! That's good, but I hate that.
What's the next question, CJ?
Yeah,
no. Let's read this back. I need more information.
I got my Nightmare on Elm Street box set.
We'll
right
just
here.
Pull it out.
LOL. I will not be watching
that's
it. But
the rest
I'm
of this channel is
we stream.
Yeah. Right. No, but yes. What is everyone's this question? I don't know if this is a good question. I wrote it, but none of you called me out on it. But what's your favorite like style / subgenre of horror? You know, I think, and even Joe, you've said it already. So intimate
Short
horror.
And simple. Intimate horror, psychological. That's it.
No explanation.
I love a good psychological horror. I also love a good possession horror. Like a good possession movie. Just like, yes, love it. Love to see it. And of course, the usual, I love a creature feature. I love a good, give me a good monster. Give me a good monster. One of the things I'm really sad about with one of the movies that I watched recently is called The Ritual. You only see the monster for like half a second. And I'm like, I want more of him. Give me more of him fucking shit up. I need more of that.
I think my favorite subgenre is, and please, someone who has more horror experience than me, correct me if these are not actual subgenres of horror. But like sci-fi horror and fantasy horror are, okay, cool, great, awesome, I'm in the clear. Even within that, I think the thing that I like to play the most with is body horror. there's something about being, and I think when putting horror underneath the genres of like fantasy and sci-fi is that like you really get to dig deep into what the roots of those main genres are and pull out like what is so truly like essentially pulling out all of the negativity and like all of like the deep rooted truths that have to be about those genres. Mm-hmm. With like a lot of like, you know, a lot of fantasy horror dealing with like spiritualism and like the undead and like otherworldly like powers and like the everything has like the sheen of like, you know, you can have your fantasy however, you know, have your knights or whatever going about whatever they do, but like understanding the broader metaphysical ideas of what it means to have worlds where demons and ghosts and people can bring shit back from the dead or even from sci-fi. Like, as soon as you start talking about transhumanism and like people can start modding their bodies, the horror that comes out of giving up some form of your own autonomy for corporations to make things for you to put in or replace parts of your body with, truly terrifying. And I think like digging deep into those things and finding like having to acknowledge and like kind of confront what it means to have for these things to exist in the first place.
I cannot fucking do sci-fi horror because of everything that I've seen about people getting lost in space. That's like the one thing I can't do that shit. I guess it's like, sometimes it's not even sci-fi. I mean, maybe it is. If it takes place with astronauts in space, is it sci-fi or is it just?
No, because astronauts
go to space. Astronauts go to space.
It depends on where, like when, I guess. Like if it's sci-fi, like if it's like space right now. Like, versus like space.
Love, Death, and Robots. Love, Death, and Robots. That one episode where there's a lady who has to cut off her own arm to give herself momentum to get back to her like fucking ship. Done. I can't do. I will never.
Oh
I can't,
my I can't god. Do it again.
I want to add on. I love hagsploitation also as a horror trope. Pearl and X and all that shit. It's
damn
my whole
Pearl
thing
was so good.
I need to watch it.
My favorites would be. I love creature features because I love seeing how to take like the concept of like, okay, we are making the physical embodiment of the themes of this movie into a creature. And I love seeing what you can do with that. But then I also love good psychological horror.
Good sex. Sorry.
I love good psychological horror. I'm sure my subtitles are a fucking mess because I talk so fast. I love good psychological horror. I just watched Last Night in Soho as well as Smile recently, and both of those are good. Smile is like a roller coaster ride. I was in the movie theater giggling after every scare, like they really set me up there. they introduced a cat, and literally I was sitting there next to my boyfriend in the theater going, oh. They're gonna hurt that cat. I know it.
Yeah,
they even did like a shot where you see like point of view of the woman looking down at her cat. So it's the cat from a tilted down camera. I'm like, oh, they're gonna hurt them. You have the cat looking directly up, making the like Puss in Boots eyes at the cat. I'm like, they're gonna hurt that cat. And so I was sitting there in suspense for like an hour. Like, they're gonna hurt this cat. They're gonna hurt. Oh, they hurt the cat.
Yeah.
Damn.
Psychological horror, that whole, seeing where the mind can take you, is really what, like the part of it that's just like the relationship between horror and the mind. And, I really love looking into that. And then creature features with the more deep-seated metaphors that you can put into a creature. I love, though I can't do possession horror. I grew up raised like Quasimodo in a religious house. Ghosts freak me out. I love ghosts. I love demons. Like, I love the idea of like telling stories with them, but those scare me more than any horror will.
See, that's the thing. I also grew in a religious house, so I have that religious trauma. So like, possession horror just scratches a little bit of the religious trauma itch. And I love that. I love that for me.
I was running a haunted house monster of the week game recently, and after every session, I would look in the shadows of my room because it was like, there were ghosts in it. I'm like, have I spoken anything into existence recently?
Gotta be careful.
You scared yourself.
That's yeah, how you know you did it right.
Yeah.
That's yeah, kind
of.
So
good. I think kind of going on with what Ali was saying about psychological horror being about like the mind's relationship with horror. There's something I think that's very true about, I think in a lot of ways, true horror within tabletop RPGs is there will always be a psychological horror relationship with that because you are dealing with a situation where like it is not just you like explaining and like describing something that is horrible. It is also about how your players react to and process the horror that is placed in front of them. So there's always that kind of, and I think that's like a good thing to keep in mind if that is a thing that you're trying to do as far as like running horror, is that horror, if like aside from like if you are, you know, doing something that is very campy or like, you know, something in that realm, that you are always dealing with a person who has to make a choice about a thing that you are describing, and keeping that in mind as far as how you present things to, you know, you are doing something that you are offering a choice or you're offering context for a person to make decisions around, and molding your horror around making those decisions harder, making those thought processes harder, complicating their relationship, not just with the horror, but with the people around them also experiencing that horror, and recognizing that people are going to have different reactions and different ways that they process that. One of the big things towards like the midpoint of Tales Yet Told, there is a sequence of events that happens where they all meet a character who is essentially, she is a spider girl. She's like probably like 16 and is halfway between a transformation of being turned into a giant spider and still being like a girl who would be the age of like the oldest of the main characters. And all of them have very different relationships with this character based on the context of her. Walter is another person who was transformed into an animal and so has a relationship with him. Like, you and I are facing similar traumas and I know what you are going through. You have the relationship between Dakota and her about being like, we are around the same age dealing with who we, our own identity, in the way that this girl is like in a lot of ways having lots of feelings of body dysmorphia, of I am being forcibly turned into something that I don't identify as, or like this is not my body, right? This is not the way in which I view myself, and other people view me differently based on the way in which I look and the way that this transformation is making me act. And then the relation, which is very specifically Dakota being a trans male character, going through that process of discovering his own identity, is also like really connected with. And then that relationship she has with Dorothy is a child who has not had all of the experiences that either Dakota or Walter had. And her only experience with this character is this is a giant, scary spider girl who may or may not have killed my friend. Like, I don't know, like, this person is just a creature of horror in her eyes. And like everything that is wrong with this fantastical world that they've been like thrown into, and like recognizing that you putting a singular thing in front of them, everyone is going to have different relationships with that. And like, to a very strong degree, that is what psychological horror is how do you react when put in the face of terrifying or horrific situations.
So true, bestie. I wasn't sure who, I was listening, but so I wasn't sure if like everyone had gone. So I was just like, yeah.
We're good.
Word. But yeah, love the discussion. Love you all so very much. We've got time for about like one to two. And I know that I do actually have one more. This one honestly is funny. It's almost like a plug. what, I mean, yeah, we'll probably ask both of these, but like what's been your favorite thing you've done, like as a project, as like a tangible result in a sense of like horror, or like what's your idea for, you know, like your, the next big idea for you of like, what are you about to do that, you know, this is about to shake motherfuckers to their core. Yeah.
What I'm currently doing, is over at Going Crit RPG, the miniseries that I'm doing, it's called Farewell Yellow House. It is about, it's the concept of like having a rich family, found family, and inheritance. And specifically, the whole premise is that there is this matriarch who's 101 years old. Everyone thinks that it's like time for her to die so that we can dish out this inheritance. But she's missing, the day of the family reunion where also the lawyers have all the papers. And it's this whole sort of like weave of this grandmother is a horrible parent, you know, is mostly concerned with her grandchildren's success and her material wealth and stuff like that. But how does one woman not only be a good parent to younger generations, but she also doesn't support like this also off branch of her family? And how do you either justify her actions as a complicated person in your family? Or do you just condemn her or whatever? It's sort of about the complicated relationships that you can have with one family member, as well as sort of the concept of, are you comfortable being called family outside of your blood family, and the types of very interesting complications that comes with the concept of found family in a Korean lens, because Korean people are obviously so like ethnically homogenous. So found family is very, how does that extend in all manners of like culture? And I've been really enjoying how I've been incorporating like wealth and classism also in this conversation, because that ruins families. It kind of how things instilled themselves into the cracks of like a family, like the systems outside within. A lot of the family members are very greedy and selfish, but also they have been wronged by this matriarch. So just like love the messiness of actual real life human relationships and how that turns into what types of deals have people made in a family and how does that affect the generations beyond, kind of thing.
So I have something that's a little similar to that, but in a different vein. So some spoilers for Feel and Living Color Volume 1, which we're currently recording, as I mentioned previously. So we're playing Monster of the Week, and the concept that we started out with is that our group is a group of hunters who have been hunting together for about a year or so, except 3 months ago, one of their team members died on a mission. And since then, they're now being sent back onto their first mission together as a group again, and how they all sort of deal with the grief, deal with the fact that they've lost someone, and seeing all these familiar faces while still having this, like, shadow of a person who they've lost. And also knowing that, like, something happened that was supernatural or something off happened right after he died, and they haven't talked about it. They haven't discussed it. They haven't gotten into it. And, like, they still have the mission. So it really is, like, looking at how these different characters deal with their grief, not just as individuals, but as a collective. Because sometimes they take it out on each other. Sometimes they ignore the mission. Sometimes they, like, fall apart, or they just deny that anything's wrong. And it's, in my opinion, I really love looking at their personal sort of stories and where that falls in, while also still having a actual mission that needs to be solved with grand sort of horrors in a scale, like Eldritch type horror, but also the personal horror of just working and loving your coworkers in this like weird found family that they've built. The mortifying ordeal of being known and all. So that's something I'm really happy with and something I really love.
Kendo. Or not. I mean,
here, I'm just, I mean, it's hard. What is my favorite horror that I've done?
Mothership.
Mothership is really good. If you haven't seen Prison the Static Majesty and at the award-winning
award-winning Majesty, hell yeah,
with the amazing cast of Oleander, Joe, and Ibrahim, I don't think you're wrong. I think that might be my favorite thing, because I think there's something really concept. There is a transport ship that has essentially gone offline as far as the people who control it are concerned, and has redirected its course towards a satellite colony where several hundred thousand people are currently living, and is on a crash course with it. And the company who hired this transport ship calls on a group of mercenaries to go and stop this from happening, because a bunch of people will die. But more importantly, their secret plans will be exposed if they don't stop. And I guess spoilers for that game. I was talking about this game actually with someone yesterday, and I, like, looking back on it, I think it is this very interesting story about, like, forgiveness and identity, and the ways in which capitalism kind of dehumanizes us and forces us into specific dynamics with each other. Every cast member and every NPC in that game has some relationship with that is like, that kind of has pressure put on them based on either internal politics or capitalism, or even like the technological state that world is in at that moment. And the horror, I think, that really comes from that is like kind of putting pressure on those relationships that is like brought up by this incident, and the way in which that they all have different relationships with the horror itself, that being the AI that controls that ship. And also the cargo that is on the cargo that has been released from whatever containment that it's in on the ship. And like, I think it was really, really fun being able, like, starting off not really sure like how the story was going to go, like what themes we were actually end up going to be pressing on, until we actually got in there. And it was a joy watching just some of the best players I've ever played with putting their old bussy into
into
really engaging with what I was able to put in front of them, and like being able to react to it. And I think, at least for me, I think it was one of the more interesting stories that I've been able to GM for. And I really do appreciate, them giving their all to that. So go watch it. It's on YouTube somewhere.
It's on
the Bards and Brews YouTube.
Which will
not always be the Bards and Brews YouTube. I don't have a link for it that you can go. Just look up Prayers in the Static Majesty and Agony, and it'll come up.
Yeah,
you'll see it.
Ollie,
I'm still new to the actual play space, so I don't have a lot of, like, stuff that I've GM'd. I don't have anything that I've GM'd in the actual play space, actually. I've not GM'd anything for the public yet. I've played in a couple of things. I was in a Monster of the Week game with Joe, and then I was in Majesty and Agony, of course. And then I just did Bluebeard's Bride with Joe last week. Joe and Kendo. If I were to just talk about what my favorite thing that I've created in general, like not just actual plays, I think it would be my first Monster of the Week game that I ran. Every Sunday, I have a group of people that I play with every Sunday, and we've been going for 5 years now. And normally we alternate between D&D groups. But both of those DMs needed to take a hiatus at like the exact same time. And so I said, all right, time to give them their first taste of something that's not Dungeons and Dragons. And so I lined up Monster of the Week. And this is how I planned. Literally I came into it. I said, what do y'all want to do? And they're like, we want to be like a road trip kind of group of monster hunters. I'm like, okay, I got you. And so I came up with a fictional town called Blakesville. And literally when I went into it, my thought process was, let's literally start small. I wanted a small statured creature. And so I started doing research on small statured creatures. And I landed at red caps. Red caps are a Scottish creature, that wear red caps that are soaked with the blood of their enemies, and they materialize in places that are, emblematic of tyranny, which led to me going, okay, well, I can make Blakesville a symbol of some sort of allegory or metaphor for tyranny. And so then I turned it almost into a little bit of a history lesson with a political back and forth going on throughout the town, where the first ever English-speaking person to start colonizing North America was a Scottish explorer named Tam Blake. This is a real person, which is why I named the town Blakesville. And Scottish people don't like to admit that they partook in the colonization of North mm-hmm. America too. But I went ahead and I went for it. And so there was this one, the really meta thing of we're literally starting small with a small statured creature. And it was two red caps. But then I started taking my own liberties with it where, it was this movement in the town of people that were like, we don't want to be called Blakesville. We just realized who the fuck that was named after. It was a small town. It was a fictional small town in Texas. Cause that's where Tam Blake hit first. And, it started this political back and forth between people in the town that did not want to be named after a colonizer and, the people in the town who were more conservative and going, we're just trying to uphold history. And so there is this sheriff who is like not really putting his all into the investigation of like a death of someone who died, who also was one of those people that was pushing against the name being changed. And so the players were like, this is fishy. And so that turned in, and just the mere concept of this political ongoing created the red caps because they materialized to defend the tyranny, defend this conquering in the name of the UK. Cause Tam Blake specifically said, I am doing this for the UK, even though he was working with the Spaniards. It was weird, but it was real weird. And the players were going through this mystery and investigating it. And they were kicking ass. But when they finally got to the red caps, I got to do this really beautiful introduction for the red caps where I described how the mere hatred that they represented has warped every single part of their physicality. And I really wanted them to be unnecessarily violent. So imagine and I also wanted them to move through the environment in a very iconographic way. So I watched Gremlins for research. So my players are sitting there talking to someone who saw a red cap in the fictional Waffle House that we called Griddle Crib. And they see, like, you know, those bad linoleum panels that they have in the ceilings of cheap buildings. They could see it kind of warping, under the weight of something. And they're like, what is that? Then the lights flicker. And then it comes down and it's through force of will shoved its fingers through the wall. And that's how it's climbing across the ceiling, literally slamming its fingers and toes through the walls. And as it approaches, it doesn't approach calmly. It doesn't approach quickly. It buys itself time. So literally you're like, oh shit, let me get my gun. This shit is throwing chairs and plates and shit at you while it's approaching you because it's small. It has tiny legs. It can't move fast, but it sure can assault you before it even starts assaulting you. And so it was terrifying. And one of the players took the person out, and that's how they found out there was a second red cap. It cut the brakes to the car while they were driving, and so we had a chase sequence while it was great. But throughout all of the mayhem, the sheriff and the mayor, who were pushing back against this new wave of people saying we don't want to be named after colonizers, they could not contain the situation. And so in the end, it made them look like fools. And so my players somehow, like, long story short, ended up solving the problem by humiliating all of the conservatives in town.
Yeah.
It was great. I loved getting to craft a story that had, like, since it was set in regular modern day America, although it was in a fictional town, had the political commentary, had the historical lessons in it, had this sort of, link between the monster and the political ongoings of the town. And it was smooth. Also while being really lighthearted, it felt like the best episodes of a CW show. it was really fun. And, I love doing stuff like that for all of our Monster of the Week games during that hiatus. It was just me figuring out, okay, what town are they going to? What kind of story can I make out of it? And what political commentary or social commentary can I tie into the monsters that I create for these games? And right now we're doing a haunted house that's about environmentalism versus industrialism in the 1800s. That's also a gothic romance. So I adore Monster of the Week.
Monster of the Week. Matwa.
Matwa.
Matwa. Clearly, because I have a bias, and it's the reason why this panel is here, I'm going to talk about Woeful Revelry. And I'm just very, very, very excited for folks to see it. I don't do a lot of horror, so it's actually very... I don't do any. I barely do any horror. Let's be real here. I don't even like horror. because often I don't like to see, like, needless violence. I don't like a lot of things. I don't like to see needless violence. I don't like things that are just played up for no goddamn reason. And often, like, I would come across that in the horror genre, and I'm like, why are they being murdered on screen? I don't need to see this. Much like Kendo, as we were, like, playing the game, as we were playing Monster of the Week, things kept getting, like, more unsettling and more horrific things kept happening, and it kind of fell into this horror genre, of, like, the urban variety of saying, like, oh, what does it mean to live in a city, but barely have any power? What is it like to not have any time? Capitalism was something that we really wanted to play around with a lot of the time. And say, like, oh, cool. Like, what if, like, the only thing that you do during the weekend was go to a circus that can, like, alleviate the stressors of, like, work and sadness and depression and capitalism, all the things happen, but also those things aren't even remotely, like, the solution to your problems. What if there is no solution to the problems that you have to deal with every day? And we got to play around with that a lot, and even the idea of, like, facing your past. And it kind of just occurred to me that, like, what do you do? The funniest thing that happens is, like, the question of, what do you do if there's a door in front of you? The best CTRPG question. like, do you open it? Do you go in? The door has your name on it. Like, is that fun, cool, funky, fresh? And everyone's like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm not going to that fucking door. And I'm like, come on, besties. Nobody ever goes into the door. And I love it. I love everyone. Go watch it, please. I'm begging you. I'll cry. I'll post pictures of me crying for you to go watch.
They will.
Oh, no.
Of me crying for you to go watch this.
I want to see the pictures.
Call Andy,
can you make sure you get them in 4K for me?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Huh. Yeah. I don't have a lot to say, mostly because I'm the moderator and I sweated too much today. That's all. Sweating. Like, sweat equals brain power for me. So, like, if I've sweated, like, don't talk to me. Don't ask me a question.
Word.
But I really want to thank you all for being here. This has been really awesome to hear. Like, you all are very insightful. Everyone should go and watch every single one of your projects. Can't wait to watch Fear and Living Color. I'm going to go feral. I'm going to be biting through the bars of my enclosure. Hello.
Does that mean, CJ?
Yellow House. Yellow House is going to be a fucking banger. Is a banger, actually. Tales Yet Told, the Midwest. That's all I'm going to say.
What? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. No, wait. Come back. No, I started listening to Tales Yet Told. I was like, this is so fucking unsettling. What am I supposed to do? How am I going to go to bed now?
Huh? Aww.
You don't. Just keep listening to the podcast.
What?
You don't embrace the night, CJ.
I refuse to embrace the night. When are you people going to learn that I'm a hypocrite?
You learn to embrace terrors.
I'm trying to embrace some night terrors. Am I right? Who wants to watch a creature flick later?
Like, you wake up in your bed, unable to move, and you're like, oh, hey, Jim.
I'm like, hey, yo, Jim, take
I thought you were going to say, hey, Joe. And I was like, hi.
Joe's been to my house, so.
I mean, sleep paralysis demon.
Hey, yo.
You gotta really just let the horror get into all your life. I mean, I just had two birds wake me up by smashing.
Yeah, hold on. Did you talk about that while we were on here? Because that's a lie.
Yeah. So my pillow, you can't see it on the stream, I don't think.
No.
But my bed is right here and my pillow is right next to my window. And the way I woke up this morning was at like 8 a.m. I hear a thud hit my window. And I go, what the fuck? As I wake up and I can hear bird sounds. So clearly some bird hit my window, like slammed directly into my window. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then like 30 minutes later, it happened again.
Mm.
And I was like, excuse me.
You're cursed.
And 20 minutes later, I hear a bird pecking at my window. And I'm like, okay, I'm awake. What the fuck?
That's literally a horror movie.
This is Hereditary.
Those birds. I paid those birds.
Battle of Paimon.
You paid those birds.
Those birds were paid actors.
Wait, if the birds work for the bourgeoisie, that means CJ.
All right, okay.
Whoa, okay, all right. Yo, this has been great. My cover is being blown. I would like to thank everyone who's been here today.
CJ's just a huge bird.
Big Bird.
CJ is Big Bird.
No, hold on. Have you guys seen that video? It's like a TikTok. Have you got not TikTok. It's like a Vine. That video of like Big Bird like kicking down the door and then standing in the
It's incredible. That CJ is taping the enclosure.
I can't keep doing this, besties. I'm not strong enough. Oh my God. Okay. Wonderful. Yes. All right. We're outroing. I'd like to thank you all, who had come and viewed this. I would like to thank all of the folks that have talked today. They are so wonderful and so insightful. Come on, watch all of our shit. Watch all of our shit, or I'm going
to
open up the bars of my enclosure and find you.
Your enclosure.
I would like to pass it to, I've been your moderator, CJ, co-host of Blurred of Mouth, GM of Wolf War Story. The Monster of the Week, it's like Story Keeper, right? It's Keeper.
Of Monsters and Mysteries.
The Keeper of Monsters and Mysteries and Revelry of Wolf War Revelry that is dropping at like 4 a.m. tomorrow. So you get to wake up and start your week with Blurred of Mouth, baby. If you've never seen Blurred of Mouth if you've ever listened to Blurred of Mouth, fuck you. But also, we are a podcast dedicated to Black joy and representation in media. we hate Mosa McCarthy and Genlock. If you want to understand that more, please, please, I am begging you, go watch.
You just gotta listen.
Go listen.
And we love RJ Seiler.
And we love RJ Seiler and Method Man. I swear to God. We've had wonderful folks on there, such as Kendo. Kendo makes films. Reliable Elliot. Shout out to them in the chat. And Black Girl Mage. So if you like any of those people, you could just go watch the show. Yeah, passing it again to Oleander.
Hi, I'm Stray Nerd Boy, Oleander, at Stray Nerd Boy on everywhere, TikTok, Tumblr, Twitter. And Tumblr. I need to say it louder and clearer sometimes. Because CJ hates Tumblr.
We're not doing this today.
Yes, we are. And you just heard the whole spiel about Blurred of Mouth. I'm the other co-host on that. Just rewind it if you need more info. I'm at Stray Nerd Boy everywhere. That's me.
Guess we're on the show. Oh, God.
Yeah. Wait, you know, you pass it.
Oh, I wasn't sure. I wanted to be thoughtful. I wasn't sure if you were going to pass it.
I paused because I forgot I needed to pass.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, Joe.
I'm Joe. I'm Josephine. I'm at Scary Dog Friend. You can find me facilitating, performing all over the place. I'm on Exquisite Corpse, TTRPG, Going Crit RPG, Roll for Luck over at Girls Run These Worlds. There's going to be lots of fun announcements for me in next month, but also just throughout next year. So let's get spooky, y'all.
Passing it to RK.
I'm RK, also known as Rest Wildest, everywhere on the internet. Like I said, you can find me at Rest Wildest. You can also find me GMing Camp Carnage on Friends Who Roll Dice, and as the GM of Fear and Living Color, which you can find on Twitter at Fear and Living Pod. I do a lot of stuff, so follow my Twitter. That's the best way to keep up with me. And I will pass it to Kendo.
Hey, I'm Kendo, or at Kendo Makes Films, everywhere on the internet. And you can find my actual play pod. My award-winning action.
Award-winning.
Yeah.
Don't forget it.
You can find my actual play podcast everywhere you get your podcast, but you can follow for more updates, information, and art and stuff like that on Twitter and Instagram at Tales Yet Told, TALES, YETTOLD. Not tail as in an animal, like Google Meet thinks it is. But like the story, that you read.
Got it.
Hello?
Not
what?
Tail as in fairy tale, but tail as in shark tails.
Not tail as in
shark tail. Yes. I hated that.
Wait, how do you spell shark tail?
They spell it T-A-L-E-S because it's a tale about sharks.
I'm gonna drink blue. I'm done. Will Smith, this podcast Black, this is Renee over. Zelda,
Angelina Jolie. Wait, how do you just know all of these people in
I watch Shark Tail a lot.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese was Jack Black's dad.
Yeah,
what, and he was like a mafia shark.
What a star-studded horror. Cat. That's horror, baby.
You seen the graphics on that movie?
Cinema, actually.
That's kind of fun.
And Angelina Jolie had DSLs on a fish.
Yeah.
Why did they? We're did done. They make her a We're hot done. Fish? Why
do hot fish exist?
All right. So if you fucking go watch that, I've got nothing. There's no outro.
Watch Wolf Revelry.
Watch Wolf Revelry, please. I am begging.
Shark Tale.
If you watch Shark Tales, watch Wolf of Reverie, watch Woeful Reverie. If you don't watch Woeful Reverie, they won't let me out of the enclosure.
We're coming
to you. CJ's going to be at your door like Big Bird.
They won't let me out. If you don't watch, if you don't support, then the poor British orphans will take me away.
Oh, no. You just mean Cass?
I wasn't going to say it.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye.